Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Well, Tyler Lockett, we've spent some time talking about him today, and he did his press conference, re-signed his contract. And he's locked in, very happy about things. But before we get into his thoughts on what happened last year and all that, Dave, I wanted to hear this cut from him where we were just talking about, you know, these teams that have opted to say, we're not going to show up for in-person OTAs. We'll do it virtually. It was just fine last year. Tyler was asked about that in cut number nine. Here's what he had to say about it.
I think as we head into this year, like I said, there was a statement that was put out, and all the words were pretty much said in a statement. I think that last year, you know, we did a virtual offseason. Nobody expected it to happen, and it worked out perfectly fine just because of the pandemic and the global shutdown and everything that took place and that's happened. And so in the statement, it's also referred in there that, you know, we also want to do a virtual this year.
So obviously he doesn't feel it's necessary. It feels like everything was fine last year. And he's one of the veterans you point to that's made it. He's made his money. He's established himself, his roster spot. He's not battling for a spot. So he's invested in a different way. And I'll say this, if there are players out there that are very concerned about, you know, COVID numbers rising and things, I'm not going to knock them for that. Everybody's an individual. They've got different circumstances at home and people they're around. So I'm not going to, you know, get on any player who is looking at it from that angle. But it's just interesting to hear that. And I'm wondering if that is a veteran thought or if that's a team thought, if it is just a sea change in the way that that players view the value of these in particular. I'm sure training camp is different, but maybe just the value of it, feeling like, hey, I feel like I gleaned just as much and I did it last year as I've done in previous years. And you're right about young guys. They don't have anything to compare it to. But I'm wondering if they have that desire to get out there or if they're listening to these veterans going, hey, you're going to be fine, and you're also not going to take the beating on your body.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I just don't see how, if you are a younger guy, you certainly don't want to be heard saying that, do you?
I wouldn't think so, but it just feels like the mentality's changed.
Yeah, well, maybe it has. I don't know. Maybe it's because of the money, you know. Maybe money has, you know, I always say I think that changes people in ways that they don't realize. The thing about COVID, I came to this realization. I went to Alki Beach over the summer, and it was so packed down there and with people. And I would say 25% were wearing their masks. And, you know, there was people going in and out of restaurants, walking up and down the street. And then, you know, the we just drove through. Then the next day I went to the Seahawk complex, and there's the testing and the social distancing, and you have to go in and sign in, and then you have to get a contact tracer chip. I mean, you know, as far as that goes, the NFL and anything that they run is probably the safest place you can be. As far as the spread of COVID-19, mm-hmm. They have the most money, the most resources to put in to that. So there's that. I think as far as that goes, but as you said, it's everybody's personal decision, and nobody's gonna judge based on that. But that would be the argument I would make. But
sorry to cut you off, but what is it you think players don't like about these OTAs? Is it a grind? Is it the way you view unloading the dishwasher? You just look at it and go, ugh, man, I don't want to do that. I mean, what is it they don't like? Because you talk about it in such glowing terms about, you know, getting back with your buddies, and you haven't really talked to them over the summer or over the off season, and you, it's a chance to get back, and you love playing football. Because it just doesn't feel like that's the way they feel about it. And maybe it is veterans saying, man, I've done this year in, year out, and I don't want to practice. I don't want to hit. I don't want to put on pads. But it just – what do you think the aversion is to it? Because I don't think it's unique to one player, two players, three. It feels like guys just would rather not, if you will. And I'm wondering what it is about it that they'd rather not involve. Is it traveling? They want to be at home wherever they live. They don't all live here in Seattle, certainly. So maybe they're comfortable with their families in another part of the country and they don't want to fly here for that week. Or what do you think it is?
Well, I don't know. I mean, because, you know, it was just, it's still something that you have to love it. There's no way, I mean, you know, no matter what kind of player you are, football is a game you absolutely have to love because it is a grind and it's tough. I mean, and you get banged up and you get, you know, there's just a lot that goes into it that is miserable. And, you know, you've got to love it. And so I loved it every year that I went. I suppose, you know, as a veteran, you become more cynical about things and, you know, you're not as, you know, happy to be there. And you understand if you've been through a few contract negotiations, you know, you kind of you're looking behind the curtain and, you know, you're getting a view of what it is. And that's a business. And so that might be part of it. But, yeah, I'd be curious just to see player to player. You know, I mean, if you're Dwayne Brown. But here's the thing. I'm getting kind of hung up here. But one thing I wanted to mention, Walter Jones, he never needed to practice, right? I mean, he would hold out every year.
Yeah.
So, and it didn't affect him one bit. But there are he's a GOAT, right? I mean, this guy is one of the best of all time. So, of course, he doesn't need to practice. He's just so good.
Do you ever wonder how much different he could have been had he practiced? Would he have been maybe more injury prone, or would he have been that much better?
Yeah, I don't think he could have been possibly much better. You know, yeah. Walt was just, and everybody's different that way. Some guys need it, some guys don't. I needed preseason. I liked the preseason. I still do. So. But yeah, I think it's a little unfair to the younger guys. And then also, you know, he said everything was perfectly fine. Well, how do you know? I mean, are you telling me that more practice is bad for you? There's a point of diminishing returns. There's a point where you can practice too much. And then, I mean, and I would point to, my first camp in Denver, we hit every day for 5 days straight, twice a day, full contact. Full pads, you know, that was probably a little bit much. Then
that seems a little excessive.
Yeah, but at the end, I'll say this, I had my best year as a pro that year, my first year in Denver. But then 95, you know, it got a little bit old because, you know, I was kind of banged up. And so, yeah, you don't necessarily want to do that stuff as a veteran, but I always like being around the guys and everything. But hey, if you're Russell Wilson, I don't know how many times I've seen, what is that place? Every time I see him working out in that big yard, whatever that, I don't know if that's his house down there or what, but it looks like, they're at Santa Anita. It looks like a racetrack. They have these big white railings all the way around. There's these palm trees and he's got this beautiful, what looks like maybe a 60 yard field out there. And, you know, he's working there. I mean, these guys can get in their private jets. And, I mean, that's the kind of money that they have now. So, but, yeah, I can understand Russ not wanting to leave that environment and coming up here.
Yeah, he's got everything he needs. He can fly his quarterback guru in there, Jake Heaps. And I think that's down in San Diego somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And DK Metcalf, you know, have him come down and live with him. He's probably got his own quarters down there with servants and, you know, maids and whatnot.
He could take Jake's spot, make Jake sleep on the floor, perhaps. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good question, Bob. I don't really know, you know, what the attitude is, but I would be very curious to hear from the younger guys.
Yeah.
You know, the guys that really want to make their way onto the team and how I just, other than injuries, I mean, you can definitely, and they monitor that stuff so well now that, you know, you mentioned the load management. They have this way of testing players. I know there was one thing with like a chair that guys would sit in and then you would, you know, squeeze and it would test your groin strength with your hamstrings and everything. And, you know, they keep track of guys and, you know, whether they're working too hard. Cause you would see every once in a while, like Chris Carson was a good example, or all of a sudden he would just be out there in plain clothes during practice. And it's because he got to a point where they're like, okay, you need to shut it down for a little while. Yeah. So they're so much better at, you know, watching out for that kind of stuff. So But yeah, it would be interesting to hear from the young guys, I think. But, you know, if everybody's doing it the same, this is why I say I would love to see a couple of teams that are pretty equal. One had the OTAs and one didn't. And honestly, it could work out where it's better. They might be right. I don't think so. I don't think so, but all I care about is the truth,
right,
and what's the best. So that's the best way to handle it, and the players feel that. But, you know, if you ask the coaches, I think they would definitely say the opposite.
Oh, yeah, and that would make sense. They want as much time to evaluate everybody as they possibly can. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, the coaches are the ones who I could see just kicking and screaming with this whole thing because it limits their time and their exposure even more to players and their ability to evaluate. So that makes perfect sense. As far as Tyler goes, again, he spoke with the media yesterday, hit on some other things. Just talking about what happened, cut number six, you know, this offense was – record-setting when it was all said and done, especially the first half of the season. Definitely a different version in the second half. Here he is talking about what he felt like happened.
And that's why I said it's different. When you had that mentality, attack, 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 that's what you've seen in the first half. But when teams start to throw out different type of stuff, and now you got to start learning, like, okay, this goes against our rules. Now we got to start changing certain stuff up because now the way that we used to go, teams adapted to us, but now we got to figure out how to be able to find ways to keep moving forward and keep attacking while seeing what they're throwing at us. So that's why I said it wasn't like it was a difficult second half for us. It's just we had to truly learn what it meant to adjust when the first half we never had to.
It was cover two. It was cover two, Dave. It wasn't that foreign. It wasn't new. It wasn't something they hadn't seen yet. It was treated as something like, oh, my goodness, how do you possibly work around that? How do you destroy cover two? How do you go into a game and see that and come out a victor? It was such a weird thing to hear and even hear Pete say, yeah, we don't want to see cover two again. And that it was just so problematic. That didn't make sense to me. And I guess that's why you're looking at a new offensive coordinator.
Yeah. Well, and to recap, the cover two thing was about not being able to run the ball.
Right. But they made it sound like that was the thing that took the legs out from under them.
Well, who made it sound that way? I think the media did. I mean, everybody was – I remember our guy, Shiel Kapadia, he actually went back and looked at Russ's performance against cover two, and it was favorable. But it didn't have anything to do with that. It had to do with the fact that they couldn't run the ball, so teams were able to not have a safety down in the box. I thought Tyler just described that as well as anybody, explained what happened. They didn't have to adjust. They're talking about a counterpunch now, right?
Like,
they didn't know, like, it was bad timing. It's almost like the Giant game should have happened in like week four or week three. That would have done them a lot of good, but I think teams weren't figuring it out until then. So, you know, and then along the way, I don't want to say you get lucky, but you made some pretty spectacular catches and throws. I mean, we just count those as touchdowns, but some of those were amazing throws by Russ and, you know, spectacular catches by DK and Tyler. So, you kind of had that going for you, too. Everything was just right for the Seahawks offense in those first few games. And then, you know, you don't suffer. And that's why we talk about this in baseball all the time. Hey, look at me. I'm comparing football to baseball instead of the other way around. but yeah, you talk about these guys facing some adversity. And if you don't face any, I mean, look, everybody's good in the NFL. And eventually you're going to catch up. You're going to get caught up to. And that's kind of what the Giants did, and then other teams saw that. Buffalo did it. The Rams did it. I mean, it was difficult in the second half because they just didn't have – like I said, it's too bad that they didn't get punched in the mouth earlier with something. Because, you know, whatever you do, like whatever the Giants did, everybody's looking at that on film. I mean, they're like, how in the world did the Giants go in there with Colt McCoy and beat the Seahawks, who were just on fire? Well, let's take a look at the film. And, you know, now all of a sudden there's kind of a formula out there.
Yeah, and in like baseball, it's that chess match. It's not as, you know, baseball, it's at-bat to at-bat and things like that. You know, finding holes in a hitter's swing, who's hot, and then the word gets out, here's where they're weak. Okay, now I've got to adjust. It's all about those adjustments. And it sounds cliche or very general. You got to make adjustments, but that's what he's talking about. The league adjusted to what they were doing, and they didn't adjust back. They didn't make their next move if we're comparing it to chess. And here is in the next cut, number seven, saying basically that's the takeaway from last year is learning how to adapt and how to adjust.
It's not about being able to be like, they can't stop the pass and we're going to keep passing. It's about if a team makes us have to run the ball, we as a team have to be able to execute it. If a team is giving us all the short throws, being able to execute that. If they're going to give us the deep balls, we're going to take that. Whatever a team gives us, we just got to take it rather than trying to go out there and do whatever we obviously want to do. So that's what I've learned. And that's what we as players have also learned is that let's try to get more comfortable with knowledge and understanding of what teams are trying to throw at us early on. And that's one of the things that we started learning towards the middle to end of the season last year.
And I love hearing that, you know, it's not, you know, hey, I'm going to take this square peg and jam it into this round hole. It's going to fit. It's sort of what they're doing, sort of beating their head against the wall rather than taking what the defense was giving them. They're out there with the idea, we're just going to impose our will. We're just going to do what we do, no matter, you know, it doesn't matter what they're doing. We're going to do what we do. And it wasn't working. And it sounds like there was no plan B or there was no adjustment. Hey, they're giving us all this underneath stuff. But they didn't utilize that. They didn't take advantage of any of it. It was still, hey, we're a big play offense. We throw the ball deep, and we're still going to do that.
Yeah. Well, and once again, and just like your explanation there, I mean, I thought that was as well put as we've heard from anybody, Russell included, as far as Tyler assessing last year and what happened offensively. And, you know, and I'm not trying to pile on because – you know, he's gone now, but, you know, Brian Schottenheimer, I think that was maybe his weakness, was that he wasn't able to, you know, you'll hear like Andy Reid all the time say this when he's coaching his quarterbacks up on the sidelines, he'll say, let the game come to you, mm-hmm. let the game come to you. Don't just take what they're giving you. And then, you know, you'll take a shot later. But man, it just felt like in that Giant game, especially, they just kept going deep and deep. And, you know, they did a really good job with their coverage, and there was just nowhere to go. And, you know, and I thought we talk about Margavichus and Sadler the other day kind of getting flustered, and you could see the look on their face. Boy, you could see Russ's body language. And he ended up taking a couple of sacks in that game where there was one where Carlos Hyde was wide open in a check down, and he could have run for 60 yards, and Russ just did not see him. So just get frustrated. All of a sudden you start forcing things. And, you know, they didn't have anywhere to go. So, yeah, I thought it was a good assessment by Tyler. And then you know, summing it up, it's pretty much how it went. And it took a while to kind of get there and figure that out, not until you go back and watch it a couple of times and sort of, you know, go over the film and figure out what happened. But that was it. That's where I'm really confident that this Shane Waldron, if we're starting to see the new offensive coordinator, him and Andy Dickerson, if we start to see the similar type of plays that the Rams run, I felt like they made it really easy. And this is both good and bad news for the Seahawks. They made it easy enough that Jared Goff could figure it out. And
I love how little you think of him.
I'm sorry. I admire his toughness. I mean,
you talk about him like he's mentally compromised. That they took this scrap heap player and made him serviceable.
Well, what is he, the number one pick in the draft? Or was Wentz? I can never remember which one was which. But, yeah, I feel like he just – there was a couple of times where he panicked when his headset went out. And I felt like Sean McVay – and obviously Sean McVay's offense, so they're going to continue to do what they're going to do down there.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully Waldron brings some of the – something that Mark Schlereth told us, who, by the way, has a wonderful Twitter little film for the Jets fans.
Yeah.
You got to check that out.
So good.
But, you know, he said – look, there's got to be a few plays where it's not so difficult for Russ. You know, you look at some of the touchdowns that he's thrown. I mean, I love the spectacular escape and throwing to his right while running to his left. That's all great, and it's a good highlight and everything. But, my God, it can't be that difficult on every single touchdown you throw. And that's the way it became for Russ. He had to make so many, he was relied on way too heavily. And I just think that with this offense, there'll be a lot more sort of easy plays that can get yardage, be effective, and kind of take, you know, a little time off from having to make spectacular plays all the time.
Yeah, one more from Tyler here, and you bring up Waldron. He was asked about him and just talking about the fact he hasn't had a chance to meet him in person, but looking forward to that.
We haven't been able to, like, go over a whole bunch of stuff. You just got to be able to have those conversations and listen and try to understand what to expect. If there's new plays or new formations to learn, it's like, okay, got to go back to the study mode as if I'm in college again. But I think everybody has said so many great things about Shane. And, you know, I'm looking forward to being able to meet him. I met him whenever I was going into the facility to sign. He was just outside and I was able to say hi and stuff. But for the most part, man, like, I'm just looking forward to being able to play, being able to get to know him, get to know his family. And the biggest thing that I've learned is football is about relationships.
Well, and he hit on what everybody else is going to have to face with that offense, and that's kind of going to school and studying. You know, it's going to be new on a lot of levels. He's not brought in here just to do what they've already been doing. They brought him in here to change things up. So everybody's going to be learning, whether it's terminology or formations or what have you. There's going to be a lot of new stuff for all of these guys to learn. And this is a year where we just talked about they've opted not to involve themselves in the OTA. So maybe you feel like, you know, you're starting behind the curve a little bit.
It's a great point, Bob. I should have thought of that earlier, but yeah, you got a new offense coming in. You know, look, it's not like they're not doing it. I mean, they're doing it virtually, and, you know, we've had meetings and stuff virtually. I guess I haven't noticed a huge difference, but it's different being there. And there's times where you're limited to your response and can you talk and, you know, so, but yeah, you've got a new offense that needs to go in. The terminology thing, I think guys pick that up pretty fast. Yeah. You know, you kind of translate it, and it's like kind of like learning a new language, but not really. And I'll bet you that Shane Waldron keeps a lot of the same stuff that they have as far as terminology. So it's like he changes rather than the entire team changes on certain things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, this hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto Parts and Service. They are playing two again. We're going to talk about this Mariners schedule early in the season. That is coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Speaking of the sports app, if you guys don't have that, you should download it because A, it's free, which is the right price, and B, you've got everything at your fingertips if you've got the app. On a beautiful day like today, maybe you're on the move, you're outside, and you're wondering, I wonder what Wyman and Bob are talking about today. I wonder what they think of the Mariners. I wonder what Wyman thinks of Marco Gonzalez and his start tomorrow. Well, you won't have to wonder. You could just take us with you. You don't miss anything. Or you could go back and listen to the podcast or watch the videos or text. You've got it all right there at your fingertips. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. So check that out. If you don't have that app, go ahead and get that because all the cool kids have it. Dave, you know, they might be asking that question. What does Dave Wyman think about Marco? Because tomorrow, for those that missed it, the Mariners were rained out today. So you're going to see yet another doubleheader tomorrow starting early in the morning. Early for me, anyway, 9:35 a.m. I'll try to set my alarm and be up in time for that. But Marco will get the start in game one, Justin Dunn in game two. I think we are all hoping beyond hope that Marco fixes whatever's wrong. And we talked to Shannon Dreyer about it. I think we're all just like sitting here going, please, please make it right again, because none of us want to worry about Marco. He was the sure thing in the rotation, and everybody else had a question mark for different reasons. And so far, you could argue he's been the worst pitcher because he's had two starts. Dunn's only had one, and Paxton only threw 24 pitches. So he's had two starts where it just did not go well at all. It was just so un-Marco-like. I feel like everybody's sort of on the edge of their seat with this one.
I am. I'm excited to see what happens. I mean, I don't see there's any way that he has that kind of an outing that reflects anything those first two. So, yeah, I believe in him. I believe in Marco Gonzalez. I think he's going to be, I think he's going to be good. So I'd be excited to see that. Yeah, it's funny. Did you hear Shannon's thing during the break there? That's where I heard the Tom Murphy thing. And what Tom Murphy was talking about there in this case was the shift. And what Shannon said is so true, and it's something that happens in football too, that you always notice things when they fail. You don't ever notice it when they work. You know, yeah. Like fourth down conversions in the NFL, when Pete going for it on fourth down, you know, the times that he goes for it and gets it, he doesn't, you know, or they pass on like a third and two and it works. And I mean, if that doesn't work, people are like, oh, what an idiot. Why did he not run the ball there? And it was similar, you know, he's talking about the shift there. So, you know, there was that. There was some base running errors. They've had some things that have blown up because of that, not so much, and that's just a normal process of, you know, going through the baseball season. You're going to have things that work against you every once in a while. So I'm hoping, you know, that's kind of the story with Marco Gonzalez. I don't think that he's gonna somehow fold and crumble and be a guy that gets inside his head and spikes balls into the grass like we saw from Margavich's.
You love that.
Oh my gosh, it was just such a great example of how it's such a technical thing, pitching, you know? And you watch things in slow motion and way the bodies move, and if one thing is just slightly off, you mentioned this yesterday, Bob, you take a step that's like 2 inches off to the left instead of, you know, the right or whatever, you know, everything can go horribly wrong.
Yeah.
So, but I think Marco's already beaten those demons.
Yeah, it is weird if you think about it, because if he's in there, let's say for a normal amount of time, he might throw 90 pitches, maybe 100. You never know. But just say 90. He's got to repeat that motion 90 times.
Wow.
90 times he's going to try to duplicate that motion and keep all of those moving parts together, because it's a Swiss watch. It's finely tuned. It has to run this way in order for it to be successful. And the idea of repeating that over and over and over to have success is really unique. It really is. And it's a lot of opportunity to do things well, and it's a lot of opportunity for things to go the wrong direction, because I landed wrong on this pitch, or, you know, I got out ahead of myself. I was too quick to the plate with it, or, you know, there's just so many little things that they talk about that if we're just sitting there watching going, looks the same to me. But when they watch it, they're going, oh, see his lead leg here, or see what he did with his arm here, or see how he's following here. Or it can be just the most minute detail. You're going, oh, I never would have noticed that in a million years. But it completely impacts the results. And, you know, that's why it is mentally such a grind for these guys to get out of their head, because they have to duplicate that over and over and over. And that's what Kikuchi's big problem was. He would be rolling, rolling, rolling. Something would go wrong. He gives up a home run, or he gives up a few hits in a row, and all of a sudden the wheels totally come off. He couldn't figure out how to correct himself within the game. It was always, we're going to go back and look at the tape afterwards and make adjustments. These guys have to figure out how to adjust within an at-bat or, you know, from batter to batter. You got to fix it. It's not about spending the off day. Your off day is fixing it. You got to fix that within the game. Otherwise, you're blowing up your bullpen, especially in a doubleheader situation like this. Marco's got to be on his game. Otherwise, you know, if he gets knocked out of there early, they're going into the bullpen early. You've got Justin Dunn going in the second game, who is certainly no sure thing to, you know, carry you through. So you need those arms in the bullpen as fresh as possible. So there's even a little bit more on him to go out there and pitch well in this one because of who's following him in the second game.
Yeah, and, you know, I mentioned the younger guys, and we talked about slumps, Bob, you know, over the last couple of days. And you don't have those, or you do later in your career, but they're just not noticeable. Like, it's not something you have a place to go. In other words, like, you know, oh, I've seen this before. I know what the adjustment is, or I'm thinking too much. I just need to let it happen. And then a lot of times, you know, for Marco, I'm sure it's just one or two pitches that give you the confidence that, you know, that you're able to, okay, now I'm back. I'm back in my place where I am. Because, look, we always say these guys are as good as the number on their baseball cards. I mean, they're they have those numbers for a reason. And there's a reason why he only had one walk in any game last year. I think he was 7-4 last year. There was never a time where he had two walks in any one game. So, quick story. My senior year, when I came back from my knee injury, there was a play, and I still remember it to this day. It was at Oregon State. It was about our third or fourth game. And there was a gap that opened up, and I hit the gas and went through and made a tackle for a loss. That was my moment. And I did not look back the rest of my senior year. Had a really good season, but it was just up to that point, I was just kind of hesitating, and I didn't believe in myself, and I didn't really, I didn't know where to go. And once that happened, there was no looking back. So hopefully we get that kind of performance from Marco. And I believe in him. I believe that he's going to be fine.
Yep. Let's hope we're not talking tomorrow after they're done and we're on going, oh boy. So what do you do with Marco? Do you drop him in the rotation? Do you drop him down? What needs to happen here? We shouldn't be in a position to look for solutions tomorrow. I'm hoping that's not the conversation. So we'll see what goes on. But meanwhile, the Seahawks are preparing for the draft as it sits. They don't have a pick until, what is it, number 56, I believe, overall. And that's a second round pick. You guys can text in 710-710. Not what do you want them to do with that pick. What do you think they're going to do with that pick? They're going to make a pick? They're going to trade it? What do you think? We'll talk about more of that coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto Parts and Service. So we talked about this a little earlier, played some clips from Brock Huard, and it's just such an interesting time for so many different reasons as we talk about the draft day, because of A, no combine, B, the college football season being unlike any that we've seen in my lifetime anyway, just games being canceled, players opting out, some teams playing 11 games, some teams playing 5 games, just never had a feel for the season in general. And then the Seahawks, who, as we keep hearing in the promo, have never had fewer than 8 picks going into a draft, have never picked fewer than 8 players. And now, as we sit, they're looking at 3 picks. And, we ask the question, and you guys can text in 710-710, not what do you want the Seahawks to do? What do you think they're going to do? That's the hard part. What you want is easy. Trying to predict what the Seattle Seahawks are ever doing in a normal draft, much less one like this, seems virtually impossible. But what do you think they're going to do? I think they're going to trade that second round pick, but anytime I say something with certainty about the Seahawks and predictions, I tend to believe it'll go the other way.
Yeah, just go opposite of what you think. You go George Costanza.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm unemployed and I live at home
with my parents.
It's funny, some of the different texts here. Draft the biggest, fastest, meanest, ugliest guard in the draft and make him a fullback.
That's what they're going to do? Yeah. That's what they want him to do.
Yeah. What I think is, like you said, just go opposite. I mean, how many picks do you think they end up with? I mean, how much can you get out of a second round pick? I don't know.
I'm going to say they end up with a total of, let's see, 3. I'm going to say 7. I'm going to say they end 7. With a total of 7 picks.
All 7th rounders. Drafting the 5th round and the 7th round. Yeah.
I want them to trade that 4th round pick. I just think that's a bad luck round for them. So I want them to trade that 4th. I don't know what they'll do with the 2nd, but I want them to trade that 4th one.
Yeah, here's a couple of funny responses. 253. They're going to trade up for a safety.
Oh my goodness! Right, that's the most unlikely thing. So that's probably what they'll do.
Exactly. They trade up for a safety, which they're solid at. Knowing the Seahawks, they'll draft another linebacker. I mean, that's what happened last year.
Yep.
Look at that. That was the first time I remember for years. It was like they just had Bobby and KJ, and they really didn't have any depth at linebacker. Well, they finally kind of did. And then that happens.
Jordan Brooks. We're all going, wait, a linebacker? We all felt really good about that position group.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, they have three. Maybe they end up with five, I would say. And they'll probably trade back there. I just don't think, you know, they're going to have a different board than everybody else. They're going to have a different, you know, idea of what a guy is. And if there's somebody at 56, I don't think they take them regardless of position in this case. Because, look, if it's a safety, you just can't. Come on. Right? No, you just can't. Or a linebacker.
You sound like you want me to talk you out of them doing that, Dave, and I can't.
Yeah, that's right. So
they very well could draft a safety or where else are they strong? Linebacker, a pass rusher.
Tight end.
Yeah, tight end. Yeah. Nothing is off the table, Dave. Nothing.
Yeah. Well, 509 pointing out that Disley was a fourth-round pick, so... You know, trade all three, go back into the first round and take a kicker. Yeah, that's not happening, 253. But, yeah, it's so hard. And the thing is about them, I don't know how other teams are, but you can't get any information out of them. They're really tight-lipped. Like, if you know people that work for the Seahawks and you regularly text them, and then all of a sudden around, like, March and April, you just get nothing back. So they're very tight-lipped. They're very good at and that's the time when you want to be. It's kind of funny because then the time when you – the cutdowns take place, that's when I know it's been characterized by Schneider that's when you talk the most. I mean, you're talking to teams everywhere. Everything's very open and transparent. But around the time of the draft, everybody just shuts down because you don't want anybody to know what you're picking. So I would say they definitely move back, though. I don't think they're going to just end up with three. And maybe they don't trade the second rounder. You know, maybe they trade one of the other later drafts. What is it? They have a fourth?
They got a second, a fourth, and a seventh.
Yeah. Trade the four. Definitely. Number 129. Yeah, trade back and get a bunch of fifth and seventh rounders. That's always worked for them. Go ahead.
Well, it seems like I'm just reading some of the text. Most people seem to believe they're going to trade down, whether it's the second round pick or the fourth round pick, that they're going to accumulate more. Now, if they trade the second round pick, let's say they just trade down lower in this or into the third, generally you're swapping picks with that team, and then they're going to give you a couple of picks in addition, whether it's we're going to give you our second round pick this year, which is lower, but you'll also get a fifth and a seventh and maybe a fifth next year or one of those type of things. You know, right. They've got certain values attached to each pick. So I think it'd be very easy to end the day with five. That's why I think they're going to end up with somewhere around seven.
Yeah, it's weird, though. I just think that they've played it very well. By the way, the seventh rounder, which is pick number 250, that's from the Quandre Diggs trade.
Mm.
Yeah, okay. So that's the only reason they have that one. So I think it's the right time, though. I think pinpointing, you know, just pull a number out of your tailpipe and pick a guy and say, okay, corner, you know, and you might be right. But it's going to be as impossible as ever. And, you know, I'm not sure if they treat the later rounds the way they do the first round. But, again, they have a very, very different idea of who is and is not a first-round draft choice.
Yeah.
So, and remember, I think Clayton told us this. Is it five? I think there's five guys in the first round in these mock drafts, maybe seven, that didn't play last year.
Yeah. Yep. I think the... Isn't it what's the premier receiver? Is it at LSU?
Chase?
Yeah, he didn't play last year, right? Didn't he opt out of the season?
He did. Yeah. He did. We saw Trey Lance played in one game. Who are some of the other? I think there was a couple Alabama players. I think it was that Leatherwood guy that we were talking about that John thought was such
a
great name.
Yeah.
I think he might have opted
out. He really
liked
that name.
Yeah, he did. But I saw him, you know, possibly being available in the middle of the second round, about the time the Seahawks are drafting, and then I saw him in the first round. So, I mean, I'll tell you what, Ryan Wilson, the guy from CBS Sports, I hope we're able to get him back on again because he was really good and, you know, just very straightforward and, you know, as far as, I mean, he understands that, look, this is a crapshoot. But, you know, you look at, and he has a lot of sources, and that's what you do. You talk to people around the NFL. You know, it's like we were talking about earlier that, somebody said, well, I think it was TJ Houshmandzadeh was saying that the 49ers know who Robert Saleh is going to pick just because they know him. They don't know 100% for sure.
They don't know what the GM wants or what the owner wants. It's not totally up to Saleh.
But you're bringing that guy in, and they know what he values and things like that. So, maybe that's true, maybe that's not. I don't know. But, that was one thing that was put out there. But I don't think anybody knows what John Schneider's going to do.
That is a certainty. None of us do. But want to remind people that we're going to start looking at potential draft picks and position groups for the Seahawks team. We're going to start that on Friday, sort of preview realistically who they could go at. Yeah, I mean, we'd all love to talk about the premier names in this draft, but they're not in contention for any of those. So we'll be talking about who they likely could be looking at and which position groups they're going to target. We'll start that on Friday. Coming up, we'll talk some more football. The professor, John Clayton, will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.